Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at a juicy video, which is juicy purely because it's from a channel called Juice. I've covered these guys a couple times before, and when I went back to their channel today, their promotional video was this one discussing whether or not good people need God. So, let's take a look.
Do you think you're a good person?
Generally, yeah.
I mean, most people think they're a good person. I feel like I might be a good person, but my question is, if you're a good person, do you need God, and why or why not?
No, because God doesn't exist, and people have managed to be good without God for this long, so what's one more lifetime? In fact, if the statistics tell us anything, it seems as though the more religious people have a higher tendency to end up in prison, with atheists making up only about 0.1% of the federal prison population in the United States. Now, of course, this is just a correlation. There may not be a causal link, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to learn that the underrepresentation of atheists in prison populations is a result of things like predatory proselytizing. After all, one of the biggest factors in the ability to convert someone into a different religion is how vulnerable that person is feeling, and it doesn't get much more vulnerable than being taken away from your home and life and locked up. Add on to this the fact that when trying to get out on good behavior, being able to say that you go to regular church services is generally looked on as a positive, and now you have conditions that are ripe for conversions that are at least apparently successful. But at the very least, this implies that atheists are not prone to be less moral than religious people. I don't think it's tracked, and I can't find any data on it other than a survey of prison chaplains, but I would be curious to find out how many prisoners actually change religions while incarcerated, so then we could see how many go in atheist and come out Christian, or vice versa, or convert between other religions.
We have to start with a question. What do you mean by good?
Well, I suppose when just looking at prison populations, that is just measuring people adhering to arbitrary, amoral, and sometimes even immoral laws. I wouldn't call someone a bad person if they enjoy marijuana, but there are places where the possession of small quantities of marijuana can land you in prison for sometimes years. So when we're using the word good to evaluate a person's character, I would generally like to look at things like how that person's life impacts the lives of others. Do they make other people's lives better? Worse? Neither? Things like that.
And by what standard are you using to measure good?
The standard of harm versus benefit. A person who benefits many people and harms few would be considered a good person. The person who harms many people and benefits few would be considered a bad person.
Because if you say something is good, or if you say something is evil, that means you have some standard by which you are measuring good and evil.
Yes.
Now, I might be able to say I'm good if I compare myself to Hitler. Hey, compared to him, I look really good.
Sure, but why go that far? I can say I'm good if I compare myself to Joe, the jerk-ass bartender that I used to work with. And if we want to figure out if I am right, we can look at my life and Joe's life and compare how much harm versus how much benefit we have each caused, and thereby determine which one of us is better than the other. In the case of Hitler, that's fairly easy. I just have to not directly cause anyone to be killed or tortured in my lifetime, and I'm pretty much there by default, even if I'm not actually that great of a guy.
But what if my standard was Mother Teresa?
Well, then I would still look pretty good by comparison. Mother Teresa was more interested in making more Catholics than she was in actually helping people. Her charity turned down much-needed medical supplies and machinery, conditions in her main location in Calcutta were compared to those of Hitler's concentration camps, the medical attention that these people actually did receive was often administered by untrained volunteers who would reuse needles that were washed in tap water. She believed that the suffering of the sick and poor was a glory, not a burden, saying the world gains much from their suffering. And it is estimated that a measly 7% of the millions of dollars that she took in through donations actually went to any sort of charitable work. Oh yeah, and on top of all this, despite telling the poor, sick, and dying people that their suffering was a blessing, when she became ill, she spared no expense and was treated in the finest hospitals. I guess the world only gains from the suffering of people that aren't her. So, again, I have not directly caused anyone's death, I have not withheld much-needed medical supplies, and I haven't siphoned potentially hundreds of millions of dollars away from charity. So, yeah, using Mother Teresa as the point of comparison, I look downright saintly.
What if my standard was some person who's given their life to some humanitarian aid kind of stuff? I don't look so good.
If it's actual humanitarian aid rather than something like Mother Teresa's death houses, then yeah, maybe that person is a better person than me in that they are directly helping more people than I am. It would depend on what this person's other activities were, of course, but assuming that they weren't moonlighting as a serial killer or something, it's safe to say that such a person might well be considered a better person than I.
So what's your standard? And what's the appropriate standard?
It's a matter for debate, but it also depends on what we're talking about. If we're just sitting around comparing people and trying to figure out which person is the bestest human being of the bunch, then my standard works just fine. If we're trying to design a legal system with punishments for bad behavior, then my system will still work, but it does need to get a lot more specific because different people will disagree on whether some action constitutes a net harm or benefit. The billionaire argues that taxing their wealth is a harm that outweighs the benefits that come from providing the services that would be paid for with those tax dollars. The people who use drugs recreationally disagree on whether the harm of incarceration for minor drug offenses outweighs the harm of the drugs themselves, with some of the drugs even being potentially beneficial in some scenarios. There doesn't appear to be some immobile, immutable source of morality by which you can measure anything to determine whether or not it is a moral action. It all seems to be based on our opinions and preferences.
It seems to me that the best place to get your standard of goodness is from the source itself. That's God.
Okay, you are claiming that God is the source of goodness. Which God? There are literally thousands to choose from. How do you determine which is the source of goodness and which are pretenders? Now, sure, some don't even pretend to be good, but a lot do. And I have yet to see a god that doesn't engage in behavior that I would consider to be bad. But if they are the very source of goodness itself, how could I possibly consider them to be bad? How do you know that my sense of right and wrong is wrong and theirs is right? Are you able to honestly look at the behavior of whichever god you somehow figure is the source of goodness and then declare that everything that god has ever done is actually good? Because I'm pretty certain that you aren't going to provide anything that would point me specifically to your god over any of the other potential gods as the sources of goodness, but I know which god yours is, and let me tell you, I don't consider genocide to be a behavior that should come from what is supposed to be the ultimate source of goodness.
God is the one who has given us morality.
How did he do that, though? Is it written out in his book? You know, the one that condones slavery, treats rape as a property crime, treats women in general as property, tells homosexual men that being the way that God made them is a crime worthy of the death penalty, tells people that they have to hate their entire family in order to follow him properly so that they can get into heaven, and I could go on? The book advocates for some really, really immoral shit. So how do I know that it is immoral if it is the source of morality? Answer, I can't. If it actually is the source of morality, then I shouldn't be able to consider it immoral. So, did God then do that thing where he wrote morality on our hearts? Maybe, but if that's the case, then how would it be possible for me to consider the source of morality to be immoral? This is where the fall comes in, the Christian excuse for almost everything in reality that doesn't match up with what the Bible says reality should be like. We all agree on morality, so obviously God wrote morality on all our hearts, or we wouldn't all agree. Okay, so what about all these moral issues, some of them quite major, for which there is significant disagreement? Oh, well, obviously, that is because after the fall, our perfect morality became corrupted. This doesn't work well for reality. If God wrote morality on our hearts, and that's how we know he is the source of morality, then it should not be possible for us to think of God's actions as immoral. And also keep in mind here, God is the one who decided what the curse would be after the fall. If our flawed morality is a result of the fall, it's on God, not us. God could have chosen a different curse, but he didn't.
God is the one who has given us goodness, and so he's the standard, and therefore the standard is actually perfection.
But if different people disagree on what perfection is, then how do we determine what perfection is in the first place? Sure, you get to appeal to God, but I am unconvinced of the perfection of this being. I don't think perfection includes scenarios where genocide or slavery can be justified. The Bible doesn't even describe God as perfect. God can't find Adam and Eve in the garden and has to call out Ollie Ollie Oxenfree to get them to come out of hiding. God doesn't know how many good people might be left in Sodom and Gomorrah, so he has to send angels to investigate. God suddenly gets angry for no apparent reason at Moses and only didn't kill him because his wife performed an emergency circumcision on their child and then touched Moses' feet with the foreskin. These aren't descriptions of a perfect being, in my opinion. And what does perfect even mean to begin with? Perfect in what way? It is impossible to be perfect in every way. Something that is perfectly large cannot also be perfectly small. Perfection is a trait that we assign to things based on their performance of specific tasks that we want them to perform, or based on traits that we want them to have. The perfect stereo system reproduces sound in exactly the way that you want it to, and even that will be different to different people. But if we could get all people to agree on the perfect stereo system, it would not be the stereo system that takes all the features of the system to their maximum limits. Such a system would be imperfect. A perfect stereo is not necessarily one that can play its sound at the loudest physically possible volume, which is around 200 decibels in air. Playing sounds at such volume would literally kill the listener. I don't think many people would consider their stereo's ability to kill them with sound waves to be a quality associated with its perfection. Yet such quality maximizing is often how people define the perfection of God. They'll say he is perfectly just and perfectly merciful at the same time. Yet such qualities would constitute a contradiction. To show mercy is to refrain from punishing someone who deserves punishment, which is definitely unjust. If we're making these qualities perfect simply by maximizing them, then nobody need fear hell because the maximally merciful being shows mercy to all, regardless of their belief status. But a perfectly just God would, if every sin were truly deserving of hell as most Christians would have you believe, throw everyone into hell, regardless of their belief status. It is unjust to punish someone for a crime that they did not commit, and doubly unjust to allow that punishment to stand in lieu of the punishment for the actual guilty party. A perfectly just God cannot have set up the unjust system of Christianity, and a perfectly merciful God would not require such a system in the first place. Now, of course, I've been slipping in between the terms maximal and perfect here, which could be seen as an equivocation, but that just demonstrates the ambiguity surrounding the word perfect. Some people would agree that perfection is a maximizing of the qualities that we consider good, and so maximal is pretty much what perfect is referring to. Some would disagree, which means that we don't have a perfect agreement on what perfection even is, which renders an appeal to perfection functionally useless. So either I am equivocating and perfect is a useless description since we can't all agree on what it even means to be perfect, or I am not equivocating and God's perfect nature is a logical contradiction.
But wait, nobody can be perfect, right? So what do? The moral standard is God and its perfection, and we can't meet that. Even if you think you're good, you know you can't be perfect.
I mean, it does depend on what you mean by perfect, but yeah, in the real world, mistakes happen. But I'm not worried about figuring out how I can be perfect at this point. I'm more concerned with figuring out how we can determine whether or not God is actually perfect in order for us to use him as the basis for morality. Why would we use God as a standard for morality until we can determine that God actually is morally perfect?
And when you break laws, you know there's punishment. You know there are consequences. That's what we call bad news.
It depends on which law and how badly you break them. I don't know how it is in other parts of the world, but I know that here in Ontario, you can go 15 kilometers an hour over the speed limit and never get pulled over unless it's in a school zone. 16 kilometers an hour over the limit is when you start to get demerit points on your license. Anything under that is a simple and pretty small fine, and the police don't usually consider it to be worth their time to chase you down just so they can write you a, I don't know, $40 ticket. So, does it make me a morally bad person to drive 115 kilometers an hour on the highway when the speed limit is 100? There will be no legal consequences, I can guarantee that. But I am breaking the law when doing so. Is it the consequences of an action that determine its morality? But the consequences for whom? For the person performing the action or the people who will be affected by the action? Because I could say that speeding is immoral even when there are no legal consequences, because accidents at higher speeds are more likely to result in serious injury or death. But if we're just worried about being arrested, then there are lots of crimes that you can commit that have almost zero chance of landing you in prison or even with fines. Some are victimless crimes, some are not. Often, the Bible won't speak to these specific crimes. There's nothing in the Bible about speed limits, after all. Now, sure, there are spots in the Bible where it does explicitly tell you to obey the laws of the land, but these passages get selectively applied. When governments pass laws that Christians consider immoral, they often respond in ways that violate the law. Looking at you, churches that refuse to abide by closure orders in the past year and have directly contributed to the COVID death toll.
It's like we stand in front of the judge of the universe, God, and he bangs down his gavel. He says, nope, you broke the law, you don't meet the standard, so therefore you are deserving of punishment.
And there's the perfect justice. Everyone breaks the law because the law is so large and incomprehensible that it is literally impossible for anyone to live their lives without breaking it. And since the punishment is the same for all lawbreakers, hell, then everyone goes to hell. Except they don't, because as it turns out, God isn't perfectly just and will turn a blind eye to your lawbreaking if you agree that his son is really neat.
But here's the good news. The good news is that the judge of the universe gets down from his seat and he says, you're not good, I am, so I can take the punishment for you and I am going to give you grace.
Which is not justice, making God not perfectly just, even if I accept this explanation. If a serial killer is put on trial and found to be guilty, but the judge steps down and says, I'll go to prison instead, you're free to go, would anyone say that in this scenario justice had been served? No, I wouldn't think so at any rate. And that's it for this one. I did one video talking about Behemoth's penis, and now my videos are getting shorter and shorter. I wonder if there's a correlation there. Probably not. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Neil Henderson, who says, Viced Rhino. Indeed he is. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the perfection by which we measure the goodness of my videos. If you'd like to make sure all my videos deserve to go to hell, you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my PO Box address. See you next time!